Hi, this is Christopher Sperry, and this is the iTech Gear Weekly, episode number 12, Turn Your Old Computer into a Chromebook, recorded Sunday, February 20th, 2022. As I said, I am Christopher Sperry, the editor-in-chief over at itechgear.org, and joining me today is Mr. Chris Gavula, the former contributing editor over at Gear Diary and Pocket Now. How are you, Chris?
Great. How are you doing tonight?
We're doing pretty good.
We're at 12 of these already, huh?
12 already.
12 wow. Already.
So yeah. Sometimes time flies when you're yeah.
Yeah.
Having fun.
Are we still talking? Oh yeah.
Yes, we are still, yes, we're still recording. Yes. Also joining us today in the voice of wisdom. Hopefully, is Mr. Larry McJunkin, the former co-owner of Wugnet Publications. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, I think.
I'm glad you are back with us.
I am glad to be back, and I'm really hopeful that I won't have to miss another episode.
That's yeah. Wonderful, because
we definitely missed you.
We missed did. You last week.
Oh, sure. You guys are great.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're trying. Chris will tell you we're
very I've always said you were trying. Yes,
thank you. Yes.
And last but certainly not least, Mr. Joe McLaughlin, the former contributing writer over at Gear Diary and currently the host of the Linux Link Tech Show and host of the Living in the Shade of the 80s Arcade podcast. What's up, Brother Joel?
Oh, we all know what's up. Pixel 6 Pro in the house. I'm very happy with that.
No kidding.
And we'll talk about that.
Pixel 6 Pro buddies.
Yep.
So I am very, very pleased. So how are you liking yours, sir? And what specifically did you get, and what colors, and
okay,
what's been going on with you and yours?
I got a black 512 gigabyte or what do they call it? Stormy black. I forget what they
something like that.
The one thing is for the colors, for the Pixel 6 Pro, the names suck. Google needs to go back to the branding drawing board on that. But anyway.
I agree.
But and I bought the Pixel 6 Pro case, the one that Google offers. Mm-hmm. And I did buy the 30 watt charger, and we got another charger that's also a pick that I bought. I really like it. The camera. Oh my God.
I know, right?
Awesome.
I know.
It's like I took the day I got it, I took a picture out in front of my house at night, and it was amazing.
I know you shared that with us, and it was really very bright and very clear and easy to see a lot of detail. And I'm telling you that the camera on this thing is absolutely amazing.
It's the best camera they've ever put in a Pixel phone.
It is.
It really is. You know, my biggest beef is probably the gesture navigation, which I like and I don't like. There's times I like it, times I don't like it. The time I don't like it is, I don't know why, but I got sucked into playing Candy Crush Saga again.
Oh no!
Your
poor bank account.
Whenever I have pieces to move on either edge of the screen, it will say, "Oh, you want to quit the game?" I'm like, "No, I don't want to quit the game." I missed the back button. There might be a way to turn it on. I agree.
I agree.
It's the same thing with the Duo. You can turn it on and off.
Right. You know. So it might be something I might start doing because I miss Samsung's interface had really nice gestures along the bottom without all the icons taking the screen.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of miss that a little bit, but I'm getting used to it. You know, I love being able to hit that drop down and hit the Google Pay button, and there it is.
Yep. That's pretty cool.
And the Pixel, like, I love Google Photos. I've been using Google Photos probably since it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I was using Picasa. Google Photos on a Pixel phone is so much better. I can't explain why. But The biggest thing is it doesn't
call native integration.
Well, it does, yeah. Well, it doesn't ask me for permission every time I want to save a photo, which it would on my a Galaxy Note 10 Plus. So it's like that's a win.
You know, is that related to some of the new security chip that kind it of things is. That Google's yeah, been doing that
probably
they're now saying everybody else is going to need to do too. And
That
makes some sense then.
And it is fast. Now I don't have it has a 120 hertz screen.
Yep.
You can force it to be 120 hertz all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't because one thing I'm afraid of, I'll have to test it more. I'll have to run a whole day with the 120 hertz forced on and then switch it off and see what it does to battery life.
If it's any help, I went through that little drill. I had mine for a short time, and it does suck up the battery big time. I did have to charge it two nights in a row. And I notice on the Pro Max, 12 Pro Max, you don't have to do it. I can't run this thing out of battery. I can't.
Right. You know, Apple on their devices that have 120, they kind of auto shut down when it's not needed.
Yeah,
kick it when it's needed. And I have not noticed a big battery drain because of it devices.
Yep. That's what they do here. You know, so I left it in that mode because generally in that mode, I don't really notice whole lot of difference. I will say it is silky smooth in 120 hertz.
Oh, yeah. But,
it's gorgeous, isn't it?
But it automatically switches to it when it needs it. So it's like, you know, that's fine. That works for me. Mm-hmm. Probably one thing I don't like is it has adaptive charging. So especially once in the evening. So what happens is like I'm at the time, you know, let's see, is it on now? Let's see. No, it's fully charged. So what I noticed last night is about 85%. I plugged it in while I was listening to something and I noticed it says we're using adaptive charging and it will be charged to 100% at 7:30 in the morning. And it's like, okay. No, so
I don't like that.
Yeah.
You know what?
I do and I don't. I don't mind it if I'm just using it and I plug it in on my bed.
Right.
Because I'm going to sleep. That works fine for me. As long as it's charged in the morning, I don't care.
Right.
But if I'm still up for many hours, it's like, it's easy to turn it off. So, I mean, it's just a pain. Yeah. But when you do turn it off, it does, you know,
but you have to remember to turn it off and you shouldn't have to bother that.
Right.
True. You know, so yeah, I could just turn it off and just plug it in, but I do like the idea of possibly, not wearing my battery out too quick. I mean, y'all, like, who am I kidding? And who's Chris kidding? Because in 2 years, we're going to have another phone.
I was going to say it.
Right.
I will tell you that with mine, I got same color, that charcoal gray, with 128 gigabytes, because it's not my daily driver, whereas with you, it is yours. All right. I did not get the Google branded case. I got a SpyGen case that completely removes the bump. All right. So it's got a very flat back. It's also got a kickstand. The case is thin. It's not too thick. All right. And it doesn't bulk up the phone too much, much more than I would say any other case that I've ever had on any other phone. I will tell you that the screen is absolutely gorgeous.
Yep.
It'll do 4K on the screen at both 30 and 60 frames a second. So it's really nice. And again, it'll do that 120 megahertz screen refresh, which is really, really nice. I haven't bothered with any of the settings to turn that on and off again, because it really isn't a daily driver for me. But I will tell you that it is fast.
I thought most really impressive to me was text, displayed text in Gmail or anything.
Yeah.
Yep. So it much easier to read than an iPhone. It so much. I don't know why.
It probably has to do with the font that they're using. And I was reading something about the font development that's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has a lot to do with why it's readable or not readable. I think Apple had a lead for a long, long time because they had kind of things going along with Adobe for many, many years.
Right.
And they were using, you know, display PostScript years ago and all that kind of good stuff. But I think so they kind of had a lead on it, but I think over time, you know, people like companies like Google have kind of figured out, yeah, we got to figure out how to make this more readable, you know, on small screens. Unfortunately, Microsoft's ClearType still kind of sucks, but Well, and matter of fact, it's so bad that if you had like a Surface device and you want to use it both portrait or landscape, there's a difference in how it looks.
Right. But Chris, Apple can do better. Look at your Apple Watch.
I mean, think they can.
You can read an Apple Watch a mile away. I mean, come on.
Yeah, they can do better. It's also a different screen type. I mean, that's a screen.
It's an OLED, right. But I think the other thing that's different with the Apple stuff, and I think the challenge that they have is, you know, they don't change their resolutions every device. Right. And so even though they probably could, the screen's probably capable of it. I think you're going to have to wait another generation or two, and then they'll probably bump up the retina or whatever.
You know? Sure.
That was another reference, and they will do it. But I think that's what it comes down to.
Yep.
The dots per inch is higher on a Pixel, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong on that, but I think they're higher. So you're going to get a sharper look. And let's face it, once you've got the 120 and you're scrolling, it's so buttery smooth looking.
Oh, it is. Yeah. It's perfect. Absolutely just amazingly buttery smooth. It's really, really nice. But you know what's really interesting, and I'm really this is one of the reasons why I wanted to have this phone, is Google has already released, or at least gotten out a pre-release of the February security patch for both the Pixel 6 and the Pixel 6 Pro. And it is already available for download, and it was like what 10 not even 10 and a half megabytes worth of it downloaded quick and installed quick.
I don't know if I've got that one yet, but I
know, you know, the Pixels have had some challenges software wise since they came out, and I know that Google has been really good about, you know, putting out releases for this thing.
Right.
And I think they're going to continue to be good. What did they commit to on this thing? 3 years? Is that what it was?
Something
four,
like
four, I think.
Three,
I think
three.
No, four. Four was Samsung's commitment.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. I think three major OS updates, and then I think 4 years of
security.
Is that what it is?
Security. I think that's what they are. Which is
that's
still
where great. I read it. I knew I read four somewhere.
Yep. I probably won't run out of OS updates. Well, granted, there's already a developer preview of Android 13. So
I've heard that already.
And they already have the dessert name too, which is Tiramisu. But Tiramisu.
Oh dear.
Yeah. Which I don't even remember if they had it for 12, but
they did not.
I stopped paying attention to the dessert
name. But having said that, I guess what my only point was that they have put some commitment into this device, saying.
Yep.
And it's clear that they want it to succeed, and they want their new chip to succeed.
It's the most success. Both these phones, both the Pro and the 6, are the most successful Pixel phones they have yet made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So despite the challenges,
right.
I'm glad to see them moving forward with it. And I told you guys this offline as well, that I'd love to have one of these as well. It's hard for me to make it my daily driver as well, because I'm in kind of embedded in the Apple infrastructure in a lot of ways, but
it's a hard thing to get out.
But I don't want to get out of it.
I totally
get that.
Some of the things I was surprised at when switching over. One of the things I'm always worried about is I use and abuse Google Authenticator. And basically, it was scary easy. I just opened my old, after I got everything activated and stuff, and I got all the OS updates and application updates downloaded, which that still happens.
Mm-hmm.
I basically opened my old phone, you know, powered it up and opened it, and I hit, there's a, in the little hamburger menu, there's a thing, it says export your key, your authentication keys. So you bring that up, it puts a QR code up. You open the Google Authenticator up on the new phone, scan that. All of them moved in one fell swoop.
Nice.
Oh, so, I mean, nice. It was, oh, it was in it was the first time I added, like when I fired up Google Pay just to make sure that everything was all set up. It was a smooth getting the card over there too. They had the nice thing where you basically hook the USB-C cable between the device you wanted to copy from. That worked well, even though my USB port's starting to go on the other phone. Everything came over. In fact, probably too much. Like it had a whole bunch of folders from, I don't even know if I have to look at my old phone and see if I still have a, I used to shoot most of my pictures with a Nikon, and it had, I had the Wi-Fi adapter for that, using Nikon WMU, which sucks. Anyway, it's so bad compared to what the Imaging Edge, which is what Sony uses, but it copied each one of those folders from that Nikon over onto my phone that were still on my old phone. So it's like, I had some cleanup to do, but you know, no big, but I there are certain apps they did use. Like Verizon has an app called Call Filter, which helps you block spammers and stuff. Nice. That will not load on the 6 Pro. I think that's because Google has it down on there, you know, that the straight up OS is really good with that. So it has seemed to cut down on the amount of
calls. I mean, call screening on that Pixel was awesome. I mean, yes. It was just like, it was amazing.
Yep.
Why can't Apple do that one too? I don't know.
You know, I have that, but I have AT&T app doing that for me.
Yeah.
And it does a really good job.
Yep. Yep. But it's like, so it's really the only Verizon app I loaded on there was My Verizon, which is the one I used to look at my account and see how much bandwidth I got. It does, when I'm not near Wi-Fi, even though I haven't made any actual account changes to enable the ultra wideband because it does support that. But I kind of wonder if it's actually just giving you a faux 5G icon because it says it's 5G, but it's not that fast. So
yeah,
it can't, because I know the only one that you definitely get with pretty much every Verizon account is the millimeter wave. That only really works if you're in.
Well, you got to be
line of sight. You got to be real close to it. It's like Wi-Fi essentially. Ultra wideband is decidedly not. But I'm probably gonna kind of wait until that settles out a little bit before I make those changes, because I'm probably gonna change all three of our lines, because we're gonna go from, I'm in the old family extra large 16 gigabyte plan. I'm probably going to move, might only be one or two up from the base one, and then probably just the base one on my wife and my sons, because they don't, I got them trained well to try and, you know, if there's Wi-Fi nearby, hop on it, you know, save your bandwidth, you know, even though now they don't really have to once I switch them to that plan. So I think they probably wouldn't notice being on the lower plan, but I definitely want to see how fast it would be outside or away from the house on true 5G ultra wideband. So we'll see how that works.
I will tell you that in my area on Timo, I am disappointed with some of the performance.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, on ultra capacity. I mean, it's if I get 200 to 300 megabits down, I'm doing pretty good.
Well, here's a real life example of mine, because it's about a week ago, I drove the distance from my driveway over to the tower, and it's 3/4 of a mile exactly. Okay. And it's not line of sight. I have trees in between me and it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's supposed to be a gigabit at the tower. I'm getting 831 standing in my driveway.
There you go. See,
that's, yep. I mean, that's pretty damn good.
That is
three yep. quarters of a mile.
Really, really good.
So I bring that in the house with T-Mo internet and I get it all through the house now. The whole thing
there you
for
go.
$50
that's
a month.
Nice. That's go. Nice.
But maybe it's, maybe it's different than MM. I don't know.
I gotta tell you, in my area, I looked at the T-Mo maps in my area, and I'm in the suburbs of the Detroit yeah. suburbs, and it should be solid, but it's not. It's a mob mess. T-Mo has made a complete mess of the region, and you know, two blocks over you'll have Ultra, and then two blocks over from that you won't.
Right.
It's like it's completely crazy.
I will tell you that I do not have millimeter wave anywhere near me. It's all UC.
Right.
And UC is not anywhere close to what I thought it was going to be. Now, I do have a case of ultra wideband, and I did record this on using the speed test app on my iPhone. The ultra wideband on the iPhone, I've got like 1.2 gigahertz down, and then was like 30 or 40 megabits up. For the up, right? For the down though, that was in the Meyer parking lot close to the house, and it was absolutely just floored me,
right?
Because that's faster than I get in the house via the wire. With
yep.
service from my local provider. So
just, I think it all depends on where you live, where you
yep.
are.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. Where you're going. Yeah.
It's definitely location based, and it's definitely.
But you know, it's one of those things that'll get better.
It will. You know, all the carriers will hopefully get it in the next.
Yep. As long as it's early days. Yeah, it's early days.
Yeah, 5 years. Let's see where they are in 2 to 5 years, and we'll see what happens. But this new update, they're not really sure what is driving this thing, or actually what is in this thing. It is about 10 megabytes down. It does up the security patch level to February 2022. Why they released it in the middle of the month as opposed to the beginning of the month, I don't know.
Must have been awfully important.
And I don't know that anybody else knows, but at least, you know, you're going to get this in a reasonable time frame and always have the latest, greatest version of Android, vanilla Android, Google-based Android on your Pixel 6 Pro phone. So that's why I got it. And, you know, for review purposes and potentially to test out a new network and see if the performance is any better than what I get on Verizon.
Yep.
In terms of call quality, in terms of data, et cetera. So we'll see how it goes.
Yep.
There you go.
Yep. Same. I mean, you know, I'm, like I said, so far very impressed. I, you know, everything works on it so far. I haven't had a problem. Mm-hmm. I really have no complaints about it yet. Yep. No large ones, you know, little niggly ones. Most of them are just Joel getting used to the new interface because Joel's set in his ways and old.
Sure. When you're used to one UI, it is a little bit different, you know? So,
or like he said, if you're used to the button interfaces, trying to get used to the gestures a little different, and you can turn it off. I'm pretty sure because I can turn it on and off on my Duo.
Yeah. I will tell you that some of those, gestures get me as well, so you're not alone there.
Adaptive brightness has never been on any of my phones.
Yeah, well, Joel and I are going to go ahead and get together. We're gonna tag team review this thing, and
awesome,
and that'll appear on the site in the coming weeks. And
I might actually read that.
I'm shocked.
You should be.
You can read. Oh my
god. Ooh.
I know, it's that scary.
Now,
anyway,
my goodness.
So, you know, speaking of Google, some of the things that they are doing now with Chrome OS is kind of interesting.
Yep.
They came out with a new little OS. They want to turn your older PC or your older MacBook into a Chromebook. And what a great way of recycling or repurposing an old machine that's sitting around your house collecting dust that you know works just fine, you know, but you can't get the latest, greatest updates on it. And maybe it's not functioning the way that you want. It's too slow with the version of whatever update you've got.
You want to give it to a kid or a relative or there something. You go. But you know what? They screwed up when they did this. They really did.
Why did they?
They left something huge off of this.
What's
like
that?
I'm sitting here looking at an i5 Dell Ultrabook that I use for Linux.
Right.
I said, well, I think I'll blow Linux off and I'll put this on. Try this for a while. No, you either have to put it on a machine that has a qualifying Windows operating system already on it, or a Mac. You can't put it on any old shell of a machine. It won't work.
It really,
why can't they have done that? That doesn't make sense.
Let me take that one step further. Well, let me take that one step further. Why wouldn't you just put a Linux shell on it, or in the first place? Why wouldn't you just go that route if you wanted to repurpose a device? I mean, wouldn't that have been a better choice? Because then you don't have that other layer in the middle.
Well, it might be, but I just wanted to try it.
Yeah.
And I can't without reinstalling. I've got to reimage this machine before I can use it.
I get where you're going with it, but I guess in the broader sense, I'm wondering what exactly is the market for this? I mean, if I've got to leave my old OS in order to install this thing, why wouldn't I just take it to a Linux build, which is going to be even cleaner?
Well, because Billy Joe Bob Suckfinger out there, he's not going to want Linux because he doesn't understand it.
True.
I think their idea is, I mean, I have a lot of friends that I have put
do
on
it, make
Chrome
it easy
because they can't handle anything else.
Right. If this is,
they have a Gmail account and they understand Chrome, and so they're a perfect candidate for Chrome OS.
Sure. I mean, if this is meant from a consumer point of view, if this is meant to take your still functioning but older Windows 7, Windows XP, Windows 10 machine, or your Sierra, High Sierra, and later generation MacBook or Mac, and turn it into a Chromebook or Chrome OS functioning device, I can understand that. But what, like,
but Chris,
like,
Chris,
why
make
why
no mistake,
you be able to install it on just about anything. Why
make no, mis- you, make no mistake? Google has intended this for the enterprise. Look where you have to go to put this on your machine. It is intended for the enterprise.
Okay.
I mean, that's where it's at. You got to. They even talk about nothing but enterprise. Turn your old 500 Chromebooks, I mean, Macs you got sitting in the corner, or your old Windows machines, turn them all into Chromebooks.
And repurpose.
So schools and enterprises are the market for this. Not, I don't think you and I.
No, I'll tell you, you know, I have, I have security worries when it comes to Chrome OS and the enterprise. I don't know that there are a lot of IT folks out there that know how to correctly provision or correctly tie them into whatever it is that's driving the domain at the office or on their corporate network. And I don't understand or know how often these things are going to get updates to keep them potentially malware free. So, I know that I've had this discussion with the folks at the consulting company that I currently work for when talking to them about establishing some level of IT security policy for a major consumer payment processing organization that we've currently got an account with. And they've got Chromebooks all over the place because they were willy-nilly about, you know, people needing something, go get it and expense it. So,
and they were cheap.
and they are cheap. They can be up to, I mean, less than $200 cheap shipped, you know, depending on what you're looking for.
Well, but here's what I'm reading, and I'm getting this. I'm not dreaming this up because I didn't know it to start with. But if you go to Chrome Enterprise Chrome Enterprise .google, what you're going to see is first page is all about the cloud first OS for your enterprise. Right. And they call it security built in. You don't have to worry about it. Deploy it in a heartbeat, reduce all your costs, and nobody gets in trouble using it. So they think that this doesn't have the problems that you just mentioned. So I don't.
Yeah, but
don't
know. But this is from a company who makes their living off of selling your information. Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure I entirely trust that.
You're not buying quite all that yet. I know.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm not buying the bullshit. Career over. Yeah.
We'll see if it works. I'm trying to prove you wrong there, Larry.
But Chris, there's a big blue button here that says, get in touch with us.
Sure.
Call me. I'm your friend.
I feel very
humble. Anybody who says that, yeah.
I'm from the government. I'm here to help.
That's right.
I hear those kind of blanket statements when you know what their business model is. And again, I joke about their business model quite a bit, but the thing is, it is their business model, and they're very open about that being their business model.
Yep,
but they can't turn around and make this kind of statement and expect me to take it seriously. So it's just not going to happen.
Now, you know, or it's just like the other story I shared in the group there about Google building an API to store your driver's license on your phone. Unless they make me, I'm not gonna.
And I don't blame you for that one. You know, Larry said it best. I'm with the government. I'm here to help. I kind of really just want to understand a little bit more about how they're going to do that, how they're going to go ahead and pull that all together. I know that there are on the Apple side trying to go ahead and get it into Wallet. There are a number of states that are trying to make that happen, and there's a great deal of concern related to security.
Absolutely.
I know Illinois is still trying to figure out how they're going to go ahead and tax that. And how they're going to charge for it. And that's why they aren't in all that mess right now, but I
get it that what Chris said, that Chris G said about Google talking out of both sides of their mouth a lot, but they can't blatantly say what I'm reading here. Quote, Chrome OS automatically deters users from falling hostage to harmful attacks and works with other application ecosystem to ensure trusted IT environments happen.
This is the same source that said we weren't going to do tracking, and then they turned out to be doing tracking. So I'm not sure I believe all that yet. I mean, they could prove me wrong, and I'm good with that. I think all they're saying is
you don't have to put antivirus tools on a Chrome OS.
Yeah.
That's all I think all they're saying, maybe.
Yeah.
I think you're right. And I would agree with that.
But I agree with you. I mean, they have already proven their colors.
Yeah. I'm a little concerned. I'm a little curious and concerned about how all of this is going to work. I don't know that I would trust especially in an organization like the one I referenced earlier, or anywhere in a regulated industry, whether that's fintech or pharmaceuticals or medical devices. I don't know that I would trust those devices on my network. It's basically a computer that runs a browser. It's a boot image in a browser, and that's it. And I know that there really isn't too much on that, but the browser it's nothing more than the latest version of Chrome, and it's got its issues and problems and security quirks, etc. I don't know that I would want just that. So
yeah, I mean, they could still probably hijack your startup screen like they can with anything.
Yep. And I don't know that like I said, I have my doubts. I have my concerns.
I am going to be anxious to see it because, running around in production, and I'm sure quite a few people will try it. And again, like I said, I could be proven wrong, and I'm happy to be proven wrong. And
on paper, it sounds good on paper.
It sounds great on paper.
It does. You know? It does, especially if you can, you know, from a school perspective, somebody, an organization has got, you know, a couple hundred older laptops that they've completely depreciated and they don't know what to do with. They've replaced them in the enterprise and they want to get rid of them. Donate them to the local school. And there's a whole bunch of brand new Chromebooks, you know, that they don't have to pay for. And they can, all they got to do is just put them on their network. And there you go.
Now, does it leave the old OS? Does it leave the old OS hiding in the background, or does it actually completely replace it as part of its process?
I don't know. I'll find out in a day or two. Is all I can say. I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it goes. I know that Joel's trying to create one of those USB sticks now. Hopefully, it will wipe the whole device. And
I'm curious.
Completely blow it, or give you the opportunity to completely blow the hard drive and overwrite it with some kind of a wipe. But we'll see. We'll see. I don't know. I have my doubts, but you know what's interesting? Speaking of new computers or PCs or MacBooks, Apple is rumored to be coming out with a new 13-inch MacBook Pro. This is supposed to be the new M2 processor. It is, in fact, not. It's not an Air. It is a Pro. And they are gonna go ahead and put it in the new design, and no glory bar across the top or whatever you want to call it. But it's supposed to go ahead and come out, I would think, with that rumored
March 8th
event.
I've heard so many changes in what they are and are not going to announce March 8th in terms of the rumor mill. I'm personally kind of waiting just to see what it is, because, you know, a few weeks ago we thought it was going to be a MacBook Air. Now it's going to be the MacBook Pro. Now it's going to be the, you know, I don't know. I don't know what they're really going to announce anymore.
Well, I never believe it until the event happens.
Yeah.
And that's true. It ain't over until Tim Cook gets on stage and tells us what we got.
Well, and it's kind of like Joel's reaction a moment ago was kind of, eh. But the thing is, let's face it, we've all talked about this before. Apple's approach is really evolutionary, not revolutionary. So we don't get excited very often anymore when we watch these things. Oh, right. Okay, put a faster processor. No, okay, that's nice.
Yeah, no. The very, very seldomly do you really get excited.
We got kind of excited with the M1 because the numbers were so much
better than we thought.
Exactly. We were
Really? With the M1 because you know it is the M1 by itself is you know,
shocking.
That was just a revolutionary fast, kind if of not change.
Faster than the 10 core i9 processor with 32 gigabytes of RAM.
I'm really interested in seeing what they're coming, but I don't know. You know, I get it. Right now they've got a low end 13-inch MacBook, which was the first of the M1 MacBooks that came out, the MacBook Pro, I should say. I'm sorry. And then they have the newer generation with the changed, all the other internals changed. Right.
The 14-inch and the 16.
Right. You so know. I get what you're saying. So if what they're going to do is a 13-inch that's kind of the same as that, then I'm kind of with you. And they,
you know what?
Okay, why?
I have come up with this little theory. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's just I really think what Apple's trying to do is confuse the people who buy their products. I think
you're right.
Seriously, think about this. We have a 13 inch, a 14 inch, a 16 inch, and pretty soon we'll have a 10.5 inch, and we're going to have an M1, M2, M3, M1 Max, M1 6 Pro. And pretty soon nobody knows what's happening.
You know, I'm kind of with you, Larry, because I think it's the same kind of strategy that Samsung had took with their naming. Nobody understood what meant what anymore. Nobody could guess. Okay, what's an A versus an S versus versus the E versus the nobody knew anymore. It got so confusing, and I think this is kind of turning into the same kind of mud. I mean,
yeah.
Yep. You know? Well, it's just like I saw at least one or two videos this week where they were talking about. I didn't see too much except for this article on the 13-inch MacBook, which does surprise me. They're gonna have one of those, but the ones I keep seeing are, they're gonna make a folding iPhone, and I'm like,
I've seen a lot of that. Yeah.
I don't think we'll ever see that. I really don't.
I don't either because Apple doesn't. Apple iterates. They don't need to innovate.
Well, exactly. Yeah, you know, yeah. You're right. They don't need to. You know, I actually had a friend of mine, close family friend, show me his Samsung Galaxy Z Fold this weekend. He showed it to me yesterday. And it's a nice little 5 to 6 inch phablet when it's unfolded. You know, I don't see where Apple would go ahead and cut into potentially the Mac, the iPad mini market with a foldable like that. So I see more of a flip kind of fold where it folds in half. And I don't know I don't see them doing that. No, yeah. No. I was just going to say, I don't see how much of a market there really is available.
I think what we have to remember is even though the Samsung has been pretty successful with the Fold and with the Flip, the numbers still aren't all that for those devices.
Sure.
You know, it's still a very small part of the much larger market.
Right.
And so I don't see, Apple tends to wait. I mean, they like being at the higher end of the market. Their market isn't always as big. iPhone market is huge for them, but in terms of their computers, they certainly don't look to be, you know, they're not looking to be 50 or 70 or 80% of the PC market. They're looking to make a lot of money on 10% of the market instead.
Right.
And that's always been their model. So I think I would expect to see a flip phone out of them because I don't see any benefit to them to doing a flip phone.
There isn't.
I'm sure they have a reference model that they're playing with somewhere or things like that, but I don't see them making, they might, you know, but again, I don't see that being where they would.
I read a statistic yesterday and I don't say this to upset Joel, because I know Joel, you're probably the most primary user of Android here of the four of us, but I just thought this was an interesting statistic. I've never seen it before. And I wish I could remember where I read it, but I read so damn much, there's no way I go back. But what it said was that there are, you know, it named about a million different brands and models of different Android phones. I mean, they're like everywhere. Everybody's got an Android phone. iPhone makes 3 or 4 phones and that's it. They said everybody on the planet right now who's holding an Android phone as their daily driver, 67% of them want an iPhone. I thought that was an interesting statistic.
Yeah,
can buy one for $300 and they can't buy an iPhone for $300.
That's right.
You and I. I mean, Joel, you're a different case. You're totally different. So am I Chris or
that's even. That's not to say that I didn't consider one, because I have one, but it's my work phone.
Well, and you talked about it. You even talked about it.
Right.
As a possibility. Right. You know, I think we're a little, like you guys said, we're not the market for a lot of this stuff.
No,
in a lot of ways,
right. We're totally different.
And we're the kind of guys that will buy both just because we want to play with both.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Just like why I have Alexa and the Google Home. I have both of them. I'm insane, but I have both of them.
But I'd like to see if you could get the two of them arguing. I think that would be
cool. I did once, but I think they fixed most of that.
we've talked about this before too, that the whole iPhone thing, there's sort of an aspirational thing there. They're selling a lifestyle, right? They're selling a lifestyle. They're selling a brand. They're not selling a device per se. Whereas when you look at when Samsung comes out, or even Google came out with the Pixel, they're selling the device. They're selling the product. They're not selling an image or brand so much.
It's like when you talk about a foldable or flippable iPhone, Apple will never release one.
I agree.
That has a crease on it.
Nope.
It's not going to happen.
Nope.
If it's not perfect, it's not going to happen.
Because immediately what's going to happen, people are going to return them because their Apple device is not perfect.
Right.
exactly. So, because again, keep in mind what Apple markets. Apple markets brand, right? I mean, they're all about brand and about, you know, the whole you said it earlier. It's about the ecosystem. I mean, the Apple, Apple Store, the sells, the volume of sales in there is way higher than what Google Play sells in their store. It's all because it's all about the infrastructure. It's about everything, the whole way the whole thing works together, on and on and on and on. You know,
Chris, to your point, what you mentioned earlier, when a new user of a phone, any phone, walks out of a phone store and he's holding a new Android phone, in his mind, he's just bought a phone. But if he buys a new iPhone for the very first time, he's holding it, looking at it, and he thinks he's bought a piece of a cult or Apple or something.
Yeah, no, but I think that's
it's not
true.
Just a phone, you know?
No, it's not just a phone.
Yeah,
you bought into something bigger, right? That's
what it took Apple 15 years to create this.
Right,
and
you bought
going away
different, right?
And you're talking about normal users there. You're not talking about people like us because we know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know about that because look at me. I went back.
Well, but the difference is we understand when we say, "Gee, I went forward. Gee, I went back. Gee, I did this." We actually know exactly why we did it and what the hook for us was. We
right. Know what the right. There's a specific purpose and meaning to why we,
because yep. I remember when they brought out the Motorola Rocker.
Oh yes. I remember that device.
Which was an awful phone.
It was a terrible phone.
Yes, but it was.
Clever idea, but terrible phone.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm sorry. I want my StarTAC back. I really do.
Well, you know, I'm one of those people that had a Razor, and by the time I bought into it, it was no longer like a trendy thing to do.
It was no longer a thing.
I bought it because it was almost a throwaway phone. It was cheap and easy, and I could throw it in a pocket and didn't have to think about it. It had nothing to do with any kind of clickiness anymore.
And then how bad did they screw up the new refoldable Razor?
Oh gosh, I don't know what that was about.
I mean, yeah, it's their problem is they keep shooting for the low end, and that's part of a lot of Android's problem is you got a lot of people will talk.
There's a lot of phones about
Huawei
There's a lot of phones on that low end of the scale.
Those were the phones that stayed in our pockets all the time until we used them. Now they're in our hand 90% of the time, and we're looking at them.
Right. Yep. Right.
Yeah, that's true. So to kind of lead back to this new MacBook Pro, is it going to be a new MacBook Pro? I don't know. Is it going to be really a MacBook Air? I don't know.
Well, this one is rumored to come with the M2 chip, right?
Yeah.
Processing core or performance core improvements. They're supposed to be efficiency core improvements. Is also supposed to be GPU improvements. All right. This particular processor is supposed to be in this updated 13-inch MacBook Pro. It's also expected to be in the 2022 MacBook Air. All right. It's not meant or expected to compete with the Pro or the Max level GPU.
That's kind of where I was going.
The M1 line, right? It's not meant to be more powerful than those two. But the M2 version of those two generation chips, the Pro and the Max, will come out or are expected to come out later this year. So
I think it's the same thing as we saw with the release cycle on the M1 chip stuff. There's going to be a Pro and an Air that are basically the quote unquote low end models, and then they'll come out with a Max and a Pro
the higher end models.
Right.
I don't know if that 13 inch Pro is meant to be the consumer end Pro.
I think that's what it'll be.
Or what? But
people who want a Pro but don't need it, maybe.
Maybe I don't know.
And you guys have heard me say this before, and especially now that we've got the M1 chip and the coming up M2 chip, I would like to see, rather than come up with a 13 inch model that's kind of the, I'll call it the low cost model, right? Let's call it that.
Yeah.
Rather than come up with that, I really, really think that they would do themselves a service by coming up with a decent M1 or M2 based MacBook in the old clamshell, because that size was great for portability. Its only problem was its performance.
Right.
Because it had a great screen, its responsiveness, the keyboard was that butterfly design, but we won't go there. They can get rid of that now. But the point is, shrink the Air into that 12-inch size. Now you got something to sell me that I want. Just like the Air used to come in an 11.5 and a 13.
Right.
I'd like to see a smaller device than the Air.
I had an 11. The 11 was a nice MacBook. It really traveled well.
I had the 12-inch. I had the 12-inch MacBook, and it was so light and so easy to carry. I still have one. I still have a 2017 of those, and I love the thing. You know, I wish it was a little faster. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But I love the device. The form factor is great. It's so light you don't even notice it when it's in your backpack. You know, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Do that. I would be more interested in that with an M1 chip in it than I would a new MacBook, a 13-inch.
No, I would.
Are you listening, Tim Cook?
Probably not. But
I'm thinking not.
Yeah. But we'll see what happens with this as we get closer to the supposed March event to WWDC in June. I mean, they've got it. If they do have an event in March, we've got one then in March, and then in June, and then potentially another developer or
they've committed to the March event already.
Have they?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, that's they what did. I thought.
So they've got one then in March. They'll have one in June, developer related with WWDC, and then they'll have the iPhone event.
Heck, for all we know, they could update the Air, the iPad Air again. You know, who knows?
Might could. Again, iPhone related event then in the fall in September or October. So they've got three events that are coming up. There's ample opportunity for them to update things and to announce and or release things. So we'll have to wait and see what's going on. But you know what's interesting with coming the comings and goings of Apple is I hear tell that the Apple store, the Apple retail store workers are trying to unionize.
Yes, so, I heard that too.
So I know that with all of the, they won the class action lawsuit that they had against the company.
They got their pay raise.
They got paid for all of the time, and sometimes they could wait anywhere up to 15 minutes to 2 hours before they would be able to leave the store after their shift ended, because they would have to have somebody come over and inspect their bags. They were expected to clock out for that
before that happened.
Before they got to the point where they were about to leave the store. They needed to have a member of management come over and search their bags to make certain that they weren't stealing something from the back room or from stock. It got to the point where, you know, this was happening company wide, and some of the times got to be exorbitant, i.e. the 2 hours or so. And they made a complaint that they should be paid for that time and not have to sit there with their thumbs up their butts waiting for somebody to release them so they could go home. So what they are trying to do now is organize to the point where they don't have to submit themselves to different policies, but similar to that. And they are also trying to go ahead and make certain that they are getting fair pay, fair and frequent or deserved pay raises, right? I know that at some Apple stores, some managers have been pulling people aside and giving them some kind of speeches about how unions will hurt employees, lower wages, and cause issues and problems.
You better be careful about that. That's not legal.
No, it's not. But there are some managers that are doing this, saying that Apple will take away benefits and opportunities. Where they are actually pulling those things away to force those employees to not unionize.
I'm sorry, but I'm going to raise the BS flag here, because in my humble opinion, I believe these employees will get these things only when Apple wants them to have them, and for one good reason. Right. There, for every one employee at an Apple store that wants to quit, there's 50 that want his job, and they'll never say a word about these things.
Unless and until that they're there for a while and they start experiencing the same abuse.
True. I know,
you know,
I
get as that. Everybody else. I mean, once that stuff starts getting out, and Apple's done a fairly good job of you know, putting the kibosh on, you know, former employees talking about the experience at working for Apple, whether it is corporate or even in the retail stores. They tie them up with all sorts of NDAs and non-disclosure.
You have no idea, because I have a friend who left Apple after 13 years.
Yep.
And I've mentioned him before. He was making a wonderful salary. He was a top level manager, mm-hmm. but you sign your life away. And that's all he would tell me. He would,
you know, that's getting more and more common, no matter who you work for. Strangely,
I guess.
Enough.
Yeah, probably is.
I mean, I've had to sign NDAs for almost every job I've left. Over the years, in recent, probably the last 10 years at least. It's just the way it is nowadays. I was actually kind of surprised when I saw this story, because I kind of thought they had already started to do this in some markets. I thought they had already started down the unionization path. And I understand their concern, and I understand the problem. But, you know, one of the big things that I've seen written in the stories is they were concerned about wage stagnation. Well, you know what? I've had wage stagnation for several years.
Don't
now.
Even start.
To me, that part I don't take any interest or any pity in, because you know, right now there are a lot of jobs in retail. You know, you can go somewhere else if you don't like what's going on there. But having said that, I do think that some of the policies, and you mentioned some of them, Chris, that Apple was implementing. We're a little bit, let's just say, a little too assertive. And I'm being kind when I say it that way, of course. But I think they were a little much. I get what their concern was. I understand the problem, and I understand why they felt they had to check it. But not paying them for that time, that's ridiculous. You know, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I believe that they should have lost, and they did lose. I mean, that Apple lost that battle, and they should have lost that battle.
Yep, I agree.
But do I think the unionization is going to help them? Yeah. It might, but you know, the challenges and the majority of the country, if you look at recent polls, says they're in favor of, you know, unions and unionization and all that. And that's likely true. But having lived and grown up in the Detroit area, I can tell you that it's always been a two-edged sword for them. And I think that the Apple workers will find the same thing. There's some good and then some bad, but the assumption is that your union leaders are actually working in your best interest, which they may or may not be doing.
Right.
Once they become politicized, it tends to become more of a challenge to get, you know, the workers getting what they need. So it starts off with good intentions. So they've got to be very, very careful what they're asking for here, because it can get out of control and
they've got to be very careful what they ask for, because they may get it.
Right.
And not in the way that they expected. And that's the challenge with that. So, I really do, but I want, you know, I do want to point out that it's not always the solution for everything.
Exactly.
You know, they've got to be very, very careful, because there are negatives that come with it as well. So
exactly. Yeah. As a previous union member, I was a member of the UFCW when I worked for Meyer here.
Oh,
two different locations. Okay. It's got what. How a union is that, because it's one union local that covers not just my store, but also would cover the local Kroger stores as well. That union was originally started here in this area. That particular chapter was started by Kroger workers. So Kroger's always seem to get a little bit better deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least for their employees. But my experience is working as a member was that it generally will result in kind of like laziness. Like my good example of mine was I was a cashier at the second time I worked for Meijer, and right about this time of the year, like between, you know, like end of February, beginning of March, they'd start opening up the garden center. They would say, well, somebody needs to go run the cash register out the garden center. Some of the cashiers would just go and do that. Now, when they asked Joel to do that, not only would Joel do that, but Joel would help people load soil under the cars, get plants and trees into the cars,
sure.
and water the plants and stuff, and pretty much do whatever the manager told me to, because that's the way I was raised. And
yeah,
and so there, that's one thing. And then the other thing I saw is there are people that really should have lost their jobs that the union said, well, you did them wrong and you need to keep them back. You know, it's like,
don't get me started.
Yeah, I know.
But I don't, again, I don't want to shoot it down totally, because there are some good things to come.
When people are being
improperly treated, a union can come in and help solve that problem.
Yes.
But again, you got to watch what's going on afterwards, and you're only as good as your leadership. So
that's right.
You got to watch that stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, it's that kind of stuff. It just generated laziness. And for something in a retail setting, it's like, if you don't like the job, go get another one. There's tons of them out there.
That's just it. Yeah. Right now, you know, it's absolutely true. It's a seller's market right now for, you know, jobs in retail. You can work wherever you want in terms of retail or any of the service industries right now, pretty much. But I wish them luck, though. I mean, I hope that works out well for them.
Agreed. Kind of doing a double clutch here and kind of shifting gears. Moving to our Windows segment of the show. There's some interesting stuff that's being said about the Netgear Orbi mesh router 2 years later. Larry, you kind of threw this one at us. Why don't you kick off the discussion here?
Well, I will, but I'm not even going to refer to the CNET article. It's a good article, but basically it's just saying what anybody who owns one of these things will tell you. Mm-hmm. I think there is a misconception out there that the Google Nest Wi-Fi is the second coming of hardware. Mm-hmm. It is not. And I can say that because I had this when I first bought this router a couple of years ago, or a little less mm-hmm. than 2 years ago. By the way, in all transparency, this is my third Orbi. I bought the very first one they ever made. I bought one of the next ones, and I bought this one when the Wi-Fi 6 came out. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I heard a lot good about the Wi-Fi, about the Google Nest pucks and all that. So I tried them, and I set them up in the same exact places, in the same rooms, in the same house. And this night and day, they don't even come close. I mean, literally, we're talking 60% efficiency versus 100% with an Orbi. This Orbi, I have a 2,600 square foot, two-story condominium, mm-hmm. townhouse, I should say. It's pretty much standalone. And I have a three access point system. I have one downstairs and one in the garage for the outdoor cameras, and I have one in the middle of the upstairs. And I have about 800 megabits coming into my house on mm-hmm. signal downlink. And that's exactly what I have at every corner of every room with my smartphone using speed test. And I'm not BSing here. Every closet, every corner. But that does not happen with other routers that I have tried. Sure. So when CNET says this is by far the fastest router we have ever seen, it's true. It is. Is it expensive? You bet your bippy. You know, break out the checkbook.
Well, absolutely. I think it's $700 for
it. Yeah, $700. It was more than that when I bought it.
You know,
but it does what it's supposed to. Fast signal everywhere in the house. What I think is a downside to it is the app that comes with it. I think it's just too simple. It does auto update pretty well, but on the other hand, it's just kind of klutzy. It's not a really good smooth app.
Sure.
And I'll talk a little more about that when I talk about my pick later on. But somebody else jump in here, because maybe they have different opinion about Orbi. I just think it's the best router, mesh router, ever made, personally. Well,
I will tell you that I used to have Orbi mesh routers here in the house. Uh-huh. I've had two or three systems in the house. I ultimately, between January of 2019 and I want to say March of 2020, I bought three different systems simply because these things would work for about 3 months and then go completely on the fritz, where I would be have to reboot them multiple times a week. The speed on the things would drop. When I initially, you know, rebooted the thing, it I'd get 500-600 megabits standing right next to it, about maybe 300-400 on the other side of the house.
This was an Orbi.
Yeah, it was an Orbi. 300-400 upstairs.
Now you know they make two levels. They make a low end $100 version.
Yeah, no. This was a $400 system.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
This was a $400 system, and it would work for about like I said, 3 months, brand new, and then start crapping out. Where I would spend about the next 2 months after that, bouncing the thing, you know, once or twice a week. It would jump back up to that same old performance, and then later in the week, it would be down below 100 megabits. And I have no idea what the hell was going on with that. I thought, well, maybe something happened. A spike came through and zapped it, and something was wrong with it. I went out, replaced it. It worked for like 3 to 6 months, and then it did the same thing again.
Maybe it's just because Illinois hasn't figured out how to tax it yet.
That might be. I wouldn't put it past.
It could be the system dependent. You know, what works great for Larry may not work for great for Chris or Joel. You know, I don't have an Orbi.
Sure, but when it starts off and it's that good,
right,
and works that well for 3 to 6.
Yeah, I've never had that variance. I've always had nothing but good luck. I mean, so never varied.
Is it that, I mean, is it because I've never had a mesh router, because my houses are, you know, 1500 square feet, maybe upwards of 2000, but it's all very square and the router's in the middle. Right. And I've never needed to put a mesh in place to make everything work. So I haven't had that problem. I've been able to buy a regular, I have a TP Link, about $400, roughly about $400 bucks at the time. And it's been pretty solid. But then again, my internet coming in isn't 700-800 either. So
right.
I'm not trying to deliver that kind of throughput, but I haven't had any trouble. Mine's been real solid, real rock solid.
Well, yeah, I had the Asus Zen Wi-Fi.
AX, oh, I know. Yeah.
That one. And that one, I will say I don't get the speed that I think I should get. But I do think it's doing a fair job, because I'll get between 300 and 400. It just depends on the day, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. But, you know, I question whether I actually get full true gigabit through the through Spectrum fiber, which I have fiber connection.
Mm-hmm. So do I.
So it's like, you know, I might at some point try a different router. But I may have to make sure that I try it on a Thursday night or something, because that's when the family's not around.
Right. But, no, I get it. I totally get it.
But I'm happy with mine. And the reason I bought it is I was in an apartment situation just a year ago. And I had just one router and it was working okay. But then all of a sudden it just started getting real sketchy here and there.
Mm.
Yeah. And then I pulled up like the Wi-Fi analyzer, and there was like 64 access points, all with different names in my apartment complex.
Yeah. Isn't that funny how that works? Been down that path.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went and bought the mesh router, had no problems since then. Now, granted, at that apartment complex, I had a measly 50 meg down, and that's the highest I can get there.
Yeah,
but in general, in those environments, even if you can get a decent single router
mesh
that supports, it doesn't even have to be mesh per se, but it has to support a lot of channels, like up in the 5 gigahertz range. Right. If you can get a lot of channel separation, you're fine. But that's the trick, is the channel separation, right? Because otherwise, you're
totally agree. Totally agree. Yep. And that's a lot of problems. And that's one of the things that some folks had suggested to me, you know, you've got to get on a different channel. And
So Chris, do you have a lot of things around you as opposed to like where Larry is?
No, I don't think so. There are a few, I mean, I'm in a very residential neighborhood. It's not overcrowded. Yes, there are houses around us, but
it shouldn't matter with a mesh. So
I agree. Ultimately, I ended up dumping Orbi for another router, and I don't want to go ahead and speak to it because I know it's I'm on the same system that Larry is right now, I think, with his pick. So I'm going to leave that for Larry, and I'll comment a little bit.
One quick question, Chris. What's the approximate distance between your access points when you were having the trouble?
Interestingly enough, I have a very open floor plan. All right.
Well, with a mesh, a dual band mesh, what they say, is no more than 25 to 30 feet between those two, or you start losing efficiency.
See, and I don't think that I was that far away. I did try to go ahead and I've got an 1800 square foot house. I had one on one corner of the house, on the east side. I had the other one on the same floor on the west side, on the other side of the house. And I could sit right next to both of those things, right next to the router. And I could be, 100, to 350 megabits. I go over to, one on the opposite side of the house, and that could be anywhere between 75 to 150 megabits. Move that one closer. It did bump it up a little bit. And they were almost direct line of sight. It didn't seem to matter, which is one of the reasons why I ended up going the hardwire case.
Yeah. I think mine would probably be better if what I need to do is I need to figure out probably get another power line adapter to go from the garage, because that's where my main router is, up to my office, where I have Ethernet that leads to all three bedrooms and the living room. All right, if I could switch completely with my current system, can switch completely to the wired backhaul, I'd probably get faster speeds on the Wi-Fi.
Well, I will tell you that I did also try the power Ethernet route as well, Ethernet over power line, and
that can be difficult.
It's very picky, problematic, especially depending on the amount of noise that you have on the conduit that you have running through the house, how clean or dirty your power is, and how old those lines are. Mine are a little bit older, so it really wasn't a good alternative for me either.
Interesting enough, I've had several customers of ours that were doing, that on their houses, and I had trouble with things like voice over IP working correctly at their houses. Right. Couldn't make it work reliably no matter what I did.
Right.
And as soon as they came off of that part of the wiring, things were great.
Yeah, and then you got to keep in mind too, some of the wireless backhaul, like mine, the wireless backhaul is the Wi-Fi network. It's not a separate wired. It's not a separate wireless, because there are mesh networks that have a separate wireless backhaul that's not on the Wi-Fi frequency, so it gets a little bit faster inputs because it's on a completely different band. I believe the Orbi is like that, but.
Just Chris, when you're working, keep the kids off Netflix. That's all I got to tell you.
Man, that's truth anyway.
If I could do it, I surely would. I don't think that's really the big issue here, though. So, because I should have enough bandwidth with a gig in and out, up and down, both ends. I should have absolutely no problem getting anything from anywhere. And now that I've got the wires, the hard wires running through the house, I'm good to go.
But you also don't want to be too close to the Wi-Fi antennas either, because you can get overload.
You can
ports on your devices, so you still want to be a little bit away from it.
Right, and they're also supposed to cause brain clouds too. You stand next to one too long, so
what's that?
The brain cloud.
I'm sitting next to my router. I'm sorry. What were you saying? Oh dear.
Well. Yeah, be that as it may, Moving on here a little bit. One of the things that I think, speaking of internet access and whatnot, Windows 11 Pro, Microsoft has announced, will soon require a Microsoft account and internet access for setup, just as 11 Home does and Windows 10 Home do. So we'll. I'm not surprised that eventually, they will require some level of Microsoft account, especially if you're not connecting to a domain.
Yeah.
You know, but if you've got an 11 Pro machine and you've got it at home and you're not connecting to a domain, if you're setting that thing up, you're going to need an MS account as well as internet access in order to get it done. You won't be able to set up a local account anymore.
That doesn't make sense for a pro distribution, pro OS at all. I get it why they do that to a home version, but for a pro version, you're usually using your AD.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get it. That doesn't make sense to me. Yeah,
people aren't running pro. Well, I shouldn't say it. That's not fair of me to say people aren't running pro at home. Some people
yeah,
are,
but
certainly,
yeah.
Clearly. But you know, not everybody's in an AD environment, right? But I do know, you know, certainly Microsoft is tying you to their to your account if you are running Office or if you're running any of a OneDrive or any of those things. So maybe it's kind of all part of that strategy.
Maybe. I don't know.
Well, you know, this
everything's going to be store dependent, all that kind of stuff.
Right. Now, this is specifically for users who do get Windows 11 Pro. And are not connecting to a domain. If you're setting it up for personal use, you're going to need MSA and you're going to need internet access as well. So, I mean, it is what it is, folks. They want you to tie a particular installation to a Microsoft account.
But, you know, we're already used to doing that with our mobile devices, right? We've been doing it with our mobile devices for years now. And I'm not sure I'm surprised at this move.
Well,
yeah.
You know, I will tell you that I'm not surprised simply because I know they want Microsoft wants to know about that endpoint. They want to be able to market Office to you.
Exactly.
Or Office 365 or Microsoft or something, some other services. So they're going to want to be able to go ahead and know that you just
And it also lets them track the update. It lets them track the updates, installation of updates better. It lets them do a lot of that stuff. I get probably there's a whole strategy there, right? But again, I'm not sure that it's any different than the strategy we've had with mobile devices for a number of years now. So is that good or is it bad? I don't know.
You know, every company out there has their own cash cow and they're different between corporations. With Apple, it's the iPhone and then the iPad. Those two things make more money for Apple than nearly everything else they have put together.
Yeah.
With Microsoft, it's Office 365.
It is.
Pure profit. That's all it is. It just rolls in bucketfuls.
It's true.
And that's, you know, if they can find a way to make people, you know, buy more of that. They're
gonna make it easier to offer it, right? I mean, if you're already logging with your account, it's like, oh, here's a click. Boom, you're in. You know, now we're charging $10 a month for your Office or whatever. You know, it's easy to do. It's real easy to do. It's just a leap away. So I get it. I I don't know if I think that's wrong because everybody else is already kind of there, but I get it. And it's going to make some people mad, though. I mean, there's no question.
Agreed. Agreed. You were allowed to previously use a local account to finish setup.
Right.
And would not necessarily have to have any kind of internet access to make that work. Part of this, though, I mean, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, having an always on internet connection was very unusual. You went on the internet for specific activities and only specific activities, and then you got off. You downloaded those emails, and after you were done downloading them, you got off, you looked at the email, responded to what you needed to respond to. It sat in the outbox until you were connected again, and then away it went.
You got mail.
Yes.
Right, exactly. We all remember that.
Yes, exactly. You went on to check news or whatever it was. You pulled down your RSS feed. You pulled down the data that you wanted, and then you were off. All right. It doesn't work like that anymore, obviously.
No, it does not.
We're always connected now. And we have been in an always connected state for,
Model's changing. The model has definitely changed. Yeah. And I think in some ways it feels like Microsoft's just catching up to that in some ways.
I agree. We'll see what happens of this. I'm not surprised. I don't think it's a huge issue or what is going to cause too much of an uproar. It's just one of them things. You're going to be on the internet anyway. You're going to put this thing on your Wi-Fi and that's going to be the end of it. You're going to hook this thing up to the wire and that's going to be the end of it. You know,
Now if they start doing things like forcing me to use OneDrive in the background or forcing me to use their store. Even that I wouldn't be surprised at that, but there's just not enough in the store for me to care at this point. Mm. But in the broader sense, you know, I don't want them forcing like OneDrive down my throat because that's files being copied and moved around without knowledge or consent, that kind of thing. I don't get along with, but just, you know, tracking the account like that, we mostly log into our devices today. So
we do.
It is what it is.
We do. And it is what it is. And we all know that it's marketing based information that they're looking for. We know they're looking for other kinds of ways to sell us services and subscriptions. So the retail models have changed. So the way that their cash flows has changed. So I'm not surprised. I don't see this as being that big of a deal, but it is definitely a change. So, and speaking of changes and what may or may not cause a problem, it looks like Chrome-based browsers being Chrome and Firefox and even Microsoft Edge are approaching version 100. And it is anticipated that particular version could break the internet later this year.
You know, that flag I raised earlier?
Yeah.
The BS one? I'm raising it again.
Yeah.
I got the impression.
Y2K colored all over it.
Yep, it does.
I got the impression the problem was a version because the number was 3 digits, not 2 digits. I didn't get the impression the internet was going to break, but I got the impression your browser might break on certain sites.
Well, when they say break the internet, you know, yes, I do think that BGR is going ahead and sort of, you know, tossing out a little clickbait there, but at the same time,
of course.
At the same time, it is a version number.
I mean,
it's a 3-digit version number that potentially may cause an issue. And it's just a matter of whether or not the sites that are out there can go ahead and update themselves in such a way that 3-digit version numbers for the browsers that are being used by consumers won't go ahead and go ack, you know?
Yeah.
They won't, that they'll know what to do and how to handle the data.
But isn't that all in the line of Dr. Hertz, when I do that, then don't do that.
You know? Yeah.
Right.
Yes. This is all very, very much Y2K ish. I think this is going to cause a lot of stink and a lot of, people, you know, worried about whether or not their sites are going to go ahead and be readable by browsers.
Yep.
That are out there, or whether or not they're going to have to be concerned or worried about, not getting their ad revenue for that particular month.
Yep. I think it really comes back to whoever's doing browser and version checks now really needs to stop, because it's really kind of a bad idea. It's
from a browser check perspective, the type of browser, I don't necessarily see anything wrong with it, but from a version number perspective, unless you are pushing features that require a specific version, I don't know why we're checking it.
Right. Yeah. And why would you do that?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we do have seen certain apps work very, very poorly on certain browsers under certain circumstances. So I'm with you in the fact that we probably have to check the browser type, if you will, which, you know, is it running Firefox? Is it running Chrome? Is it running Edge? Because there are different feature sets that work and don't work on those browsers better than others. And I get checking that and maybe delivering a slightly different service because of that, because you have to, because the capabilities are different. But as far as version numbers, yeah, what are you getting out of that? I mean, unless you're like, you know, 5,000 versions back and it's too old to support what you're doing anymore, I don't see that being much value.
Agreed.
I don't see it doing too much either, but
so again, doctor, don't do that. You know, doctor says don't do that.
Yeah. Right. Right. I can say is this, whoever has the working end of the to-do here needs to go ahead and take care of it. Because honestly, if there are sites out there that break because a browser revision went to 3 digits. I mean that's just stupidity.
Yep.
You know, I mean, seriously, it's along the same, it's the same level of lazy programming, literally, that caused the Y2K related issue and problem. Like, I cannot tell you how much back and forth I did with the FDA as well as different departments within the company that were responsible for programming and manufacturing, ROM burning, et cetera, for the medical devices that for the company that I was working for, trying to get them to, you know, make certain that they updated those things that needed to be updated.
Oh, sure.
You know, it may also cause a change in the way they program, how they program, the way they program. And maybe even a change in programming design, or so they don't do the things that they're doing now that are causing this problem. I don't know. But it shouldn't be that difficult, should it? I mean,
nope.
You would have hoped, right?
Right. Yep. Yep. Yeah, you know, it's just like I did a SAML installation last week, and now they're saying, well, I can't log out. They'll hit the log out button and it goes right back and log them back in. And I'm like, well, I need a log out URL for you for your IDM. Uh-huh. If you can give me that, I can plug that in there and we can fix it.
Right.
And then she sends me the documentation page about log out. I'm like, well, that's not what I asked for. It's like, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm not writing your logout page. You already have one. Get your person that knows this stuff and let them talk to me.
Right. It shouldn't be that difficult, kids.
Right.
So we'll
how often do we say that though?
How can
too
we say
often.
That?
Too often.
Mm.
It shouldn't be that difficult.
Yeah, it shouldn't be. But wait, there's more.
There's always more.
Oh, goodness. Well, all right, kids. That's about all we've got for news and discussion segments. So let's go ahead and get to our picks of the week. And, you know, Larry, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go to you first, simply because it's relevant to some of the stuff that we were just talking about in the Windows segment. Why don't you tell us about your pick of the week?
All right. Since you've allowed me the opportunity, I will.
Well, thank you, sir.
Since, since we talked earlier about what a lot of people at least think is the best mesh router out there, I think it's only fair we give a little airtime to what I think is one of the best budget mesh routers, and that's the Eero 6 by Amazon. Eero's for those that don't know, it's a California-based company that Amazon bought a long time ago, kind of like they bought the doorbell company they own, whatever. They own Ring. Two of them now, Ring. I think. Yeah. They own Ring and Bling and God knows what else. But anyway, this is my pick for the week because it's really a good router. I was amazed. And I came upon it only because I had recommended it to a few people and helped them install it in the past couple of years, and it worked well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's only $199. The one that I'm talking about is the Eero 6, not the pro version. I'm just talking the 6, Wi-Fi 6. a two-puck system, a router and one access point, $199. But if you wait a week or so, it'll go on sale for $139, which is when that's what it was when I bought it for the one of the companies that that I support just built a new building, and they're moving in it and going to open up next month. And I had to set up everything on the racks and put a router in. And of course, the piece of crap that Spectrum put in was just horrid. Mm-hmm. Couldn't even put a guest network on it. So I ripped that out and took it back to Spectrum, and I ordered one of these things for the office. I set it up at home here first to try it out. Worked real well. It wasn't as good in my environment as my Orbi, but it did work very well, and it was a third the price, or even less, probably a fifth the price. So, you know, it's got a lot going for it. It's a great dual band mesh router. It uses the latest Wi-Fi 6 tech.
Yep.
It's got a good integration with Alexa for people who are into Alexa. Really good integration. And what I liked about it more than anything, and one of the reasons I bought it for this company, well, A, I'm the one that has to deploy it and keep it running and everything, but it's got an inexpensive subscription model for a lot of stuff, and I'll address that in just a second. But I think its only significant limitation, and I'll get this out of the way first, is Ethernet ports. It only comes with one. One, you got to put the WAN in, and then of course you got one extra, and that's it. Mm-hmm. But that said, I mean, not everybody's use case calls for a whole bunch of Ethernet ports. Sure. Even if they do, damn, network switches are a dime a dozen. Even if, you know, especially the 4 and 5 port ones.
Yep.
And I hooked up a 26 port one to this to feed all the wall plates and the fire alarms and the networks and the cameras and everything on our network at this building, man, they're all breezing through. It's working perfectly.
Yep.
So, you know, I had it configured in less than 10 minutes. Yep. Added a 26 port network switch. The hardest job was feeding 26 cables down through the thing on the rack. That was the hardest job, really.
Yep.
So it does a great job of supporting both a highly professional, environment with a lot of high pro security and fire alarm systems built in. And it'll also work in your home. And, you know, just Billy Joe Bob out there that needs a new router. I mean, I could have selected any one of 5 or 6 great routers, but what made this my choice was the accompanying app. I'm going to tell you what, for someone in my job where I've got it, not my job, but what I have to do here, I need to know who's on that network at all times. I need to know when something new hooks up to that network.
Yep.
This puppy gives me an alarm. I mean, I can be in Egypt somewhere and it's going to ping my phone and say, hey, new device. Do you want to keep this thing going or not? I'll look at it. If it's something I recognize, okay. If it's not, I call. If nobody knows what it is, I'll block it instantly.
Yep.
I can't do that with my Orbi. It's not nearly that sophisticated. This is a really, really good app that comes with this thing. No matter, it tells you what the device is, the MAC number, the manufacturer, tells you whether it's hooked up hardwired on the switch in a wall plate or if it's in Wi-Fi. It's just really a good app.
It is.
So, and then the other thing great about it for an environment like this, I can then, once I've allowed it to the network, I can rename it with a friendly name, like this is the Epson network printer, it's the director's laptop, it's the VoIP telephone system antenna, whatever. I can give it a name. And it's just absolutely top notch. I think it's better than the router. I mean, this app has blown me away. And they have a security app that comes with it. Mm-hmm. It's not overpriced. It's not a bunch of poo-poo. It really works. It's $29 a year. It gives you all the advanced security features that you can, you know, protect your devices from threats. It's the typical content filtering, blocking, and activity insights on what each device is doing at any time. And then it gives you a log of all that stuff, gives you a weekly report. I mean, it doesn't get any better. For $139, it's just great.
Not bad,
right? Right. No.
Bottom line, it's an Amazon low end product, but it's not really low end. It's just they've made it low end. I don't know if they're selling so many of these things or just making a boatload of money that away. But I mean, there's a lot in the package for $139.
I agree. I will.
And it's, you know, if you're an individual or business, the bottom line is if you're on a budget, you want a good router and an app that lets you control all aspects of that router. This is your thing. This is what you want. I mean, it's a good deal.
It is. I will tell you that I ended up getting off of the Orbi brand, and I ended up going to Eero 6 Pro here in the house. It's got all of the pro stuff. It's a little bit more expensive. It's a little bit faster than the regular Eero 6. It does come with that same great app that you're talking about, as well as the opportunity to go ahead and subscribe at $29 a year, as you said, for their security app. The only thing that I need everybody to understand is that if you, for whatever reason, don't like the app or the app interface or controlling it from your phone, you're out of luck. If you want to go to a web browser based interface, you're out of luck. I know that I've had, Eero here in the house, Eero 6 or Eero 6 Pro here in the house, for probably about 2 years. And I've been about how I want a browser-based interface because I want some advanced features and I want to do it on my PC, which got a much bigger screen as opposed to my phone, whether it's my 12 Pro Max or other phone. I want it on a bigger screen. Sorry, you're out of luck. They've heard the cries of the people, the gnashing and cries and wailing and the gnashing of teeth, and they don't care.
Yeah, don't even think for a minute, like Chris said. If you think you can go to 192.168.1 point whatever and get a browser look at this thing, ain't happening.
It is not happening. You are stuck to their app. But the nice thing about it is
you don't need that browser interface.
It will do just about all the things that you want it to do. Browser interfaces provide a little bit cleaner interface. Not so many taps or clicks to get to what you need to find, and updates that you might want to make. For instance, if you want to use different DNS servers, all right. DNS. It's much easier to do it on a browser based interface than to figure out where the hell they've got it stashed in this app. If you want to go ahead and set up some sort of domain in your house, and you want to set up a fixed IP address range, it's not as easy as you might think to do it for this app, as opposed through to do that for a specific web browser interface, or if you want to set up a VLAN, it's not as easy to do.
I agree with that, Chris. But one thing it gives you that the other ones don't, that I've found, if you're the system admin somewhere, man, this puppy is just, you want to be notified when something wrong happens on that network.
Absolutely.
This thing beeps at you in a heartbeat.
It does. And as long as that router is connected to the internet, it doesn't matter where you are in the world, as long as you've got some kind of data connection, that app will help you do just about anything that you need to do, up to and including rebooting your network remotely.
Right. One other quick thing I forgot, though, and you sort of touched on it. You went to the Pro, but you've got a high-speed network there.
I do.
The place where I deployed this has a Spectrum business account, 200 megabits. That's all they'll ever have.
Sure.
So there was no reason for me to go to the gigabit. It just wasn't worth it.
Sure. Let me ask you both a question though. So it reminds me a lot of going back to the old days when Apple had their own airport routers.
There was no web interface
on that either. You had to use the airport utility to modify it.
Right.
And there were things missing from that interface.
Not on this one.
As a network administrator, there were things missing that I wanted that I couldn't get into, that I could get into with a standard browser-based thing. And a lot of that had to do, statistics capturing was a big thing that they did okay, but they didn't do great on.
Right.
You were limited as to which network ranges you could use. There were other things like that they did. But having said that, have you, either of you found that there was stuff missing from the app interface that you wanted? I mean, Chris, you said it's harder to get to certain things. I get that. But
I haven't
there?
Found that yet, Chris.
But is it there?
A lot of it, it's there. It will allow you to go ahead and set up a guest network. It will allow you to get specific higher end network settings.
Okay.
How do you want to configure DHCP and NAT? Reservation sure. and port forwarding, but this is
yep.
some of these
yeah, things. Yeah, I was gonna say port forwarding, port blocking.
Some of these things are newer additions. And I think some of it was added to this interface. A lot of it was not there as late as maybe 8 to 12 months ago. It just wasn't.
Chris, you
there.
Might want to also look if you haven't. There's a new tab that's popped up recently for Aero Labs. It's been changed.
Yes.
There's a lot of stuff that's not there that is in Aero Labs. It's kind of like
right. know, there are three things in Aero Labs. Stuff, but there's three things in there right now: local DNS caching,
right,
optimize right. For conferencing and gaming, and WPA3 support. So that's on the Discover tab, and it's actually where you also have the ability to tweak settings for both Amazon Connected Home as well as Apple HomeKit. So there are ways of optimizing your network to work with whatever,
sure, okay.
whatever home, setup you've got.
Okay.
So it's coming along. It's come a long way in about 12 months. It really, really
it has. And it does one other thing. I think that not too many that I've found do, it will fully interface with Apple HomeKit.
Right. Right. As well as Amazon yeah. Connected Home.
So, right.
It'll do both, and there are specific settings on the Discover tab that will allow you to get to those. The one
what,
thing though
what,
that I
what were the price points you were talking about?
Say again.
On the low end one, it's you can get a 2-point system, which would be more than enough for your place. This building I put it in the other day is 2,400 square feet, like almost like a 2,400
oh,
square
wow.
foot
okay.
ranch, and I put a 2-access point in. It was $139. But if you have a bigger place, 2-story, you'd want to go with Pro, and I think you want 3 access points.
Right. I've got the Amazon link in the show notes, as well as a price range that goes from anywhere from $129 for a single puck to as much as $349, I believe, for 3 or 4.
Still right. half the price of an Orbi, though.
Absolutely.
I was going to say, sounds like a good deal.
Yep. So not a bad system, and a great pick, Larry. Absolutely. Thanks. A great pick.
Somebody else.
Though. Yep. Yep.
All right. Joel, why don't you give us your picks of the week?
Well, my picks are very Pixel 6 Pro oriented. Mm-hmm. my first one is, you know, and this is an irritating thing, but it is what it is. Most phones now, including the Pixel 6 Pro and the Pixel 6 and all the iPhones, do not come with the charger anymore. They figure you already have one. Well, that's actually one thing where you may not have one. And that's if you go to a phone that requires a 30-watt charger in order to get the ultra-fast charging speeds.
Absolutely.
So when I ordered my Pixel 6 Pro, I ordered it along with it the Google 30 watt charger. It's a little bit pricier than the other charger on my list, which I'll talk about here in a second, but it's great. I mean, I'm a full belief in having more than one charger, because
yeah,
Joel was a Boy Scout. It's always be prepared. So I have one on at my desk here. Then I have one downstairs. That one, I don't have a one place that I leave it plugged in, or one place that I'll always plug it in. But I'll plug it in. Usually it's in the kitchen is where I'll plug my phone in, which we'll talk about the other one. But the thing I like about the Google, really any Google accessory,
yeah,
they don't rape you in prices, unlike some other fruit flavored company that we
right.
talk about. Yeah, so I mean, for $25, it's a great charger. I have no complaints about it. If you're buying a Google Pixel 6 Pro and you want the great charger, this is one of the ones that I would consider. We've mentioned the Anker Nanos Pros before. Those are 20 waters, at least the smaller ones.
Well, they make a 65. That's what
they
I've
make
got.
A 65, and that probably
and it's still really it's really small. It's not
right.
Big.
And
my,
it will probably
my
get
Pixel 6
this.
Would not work that well with the Anker 20W that I have.
Yeah.
It worked great with the 30-watt one.
Yeah, it charged. Yeah, it charged. It will charge.
Overnight, Nano, fine. Overnight,
right.
Fine.
Right, exactly. And that's where I use my Nano Pros.
Yeah.
Is right. By my bed where I don't really care because, hey, I'm sleeping.
And I use it on my 12-inch iPad, and it works great.
Right.
I mean, it's,
yeah,
it's fast.
Yeah,
very fast.
Yeah, well, you know what's cool about this thing is that Google says it delivers up to 66% more power to USB-C devices.
Yep.
Than previous generation 18-watt USB-C chargers. So, yep. And this thing like will fit in your pocket. I mean, it's not a
yep.
huge doggone brick. This is something yeah. that is about the same size as some of the wall warts that you're used to seeing around the house.
It's the same size as the one that came with my iPad Air. I mean,
yep.
it's the exact yeah. same size.
Yep.
Yeah. So I really have no complaints about that.
For
that
$25,
one.
It's a good pick.
But I got a cheaper version. I wanted to get another one and I wanted to see, well, let's see how some of the cheaper versions do. So I bought a SyncWire USB-C charger, 30-watt fast wall charger. It's gallium arsenide, 3 mini power adapter, blah blah blah. It's got one of those ridiculous it's worse, almost as bad as a Wish listing.
Mm-hmm.
Except all of it's truthful. but it's about the same size as the Google one, but it's only $16.
Have you got this one at the house already?
Yes.
This is something that you're going to strongly recommend just about anybody else as well.
I would think so. Yes.
This is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's a full $10 cheaper than the Google version.
Yep.
And to me, it works every bit as fast as the Google version. Now,
nice.
Granted, I'm not the kind of guy that usually lets my phones go flat.
No, neither am I.
Yeah. So, I mean, but this is a great secondary charger and it's every bit as fast as the Google one. It's going to permanently live at my desk upstairs unless I'm traveling. So,
nice.
It's $16. I am going to try and look at some of the Anker ones, the higher wattage Anker ones. And I actually like to look at probably the next charging kind of thing I'm going to look at is trying to find another power bank that has the 30-watt charging built into it.
Nice.
Those are going to be expensive.
right.
What's those really cool are about probably this, about $200, but yeah.
What's really cool about this is that it will work with the latest iPhone models. It will work with the latest Samsung Galaxy S
and the MacBook Air,
as well as then that's where I was going, as well as the 13-inch Air from 2015 to 2019.
Yep.
So it's something that should work all the way around. So
yep.
going to work with all of your flagship phones as well as some of the more popular Airs, MacBook Airs that are out there. So your Fruit Company computers are included.
Yep.
Very nice.
So, yep, no complaints about this one yet. And then my last pick is Google's Pixel 6 Pro case. Google lists it for $29. Actually, on Verizon, I got it for $20. But it's perfect. I mean, it's the perfect case for the Pixel 6 Pro.
Mm-hmm.
The only caveat I would say to people is if you're the kind of person that can destroy a phone, like for example, these construction workers that are all around my house, since there's mm-hmm. still lots of construction going on, then this isn't the case for you. you know, I would go with an OtterBox.
Case needed. Thank you.
Yes. But if you're a normal office worker like iArt, then it's perfect. I wouldn't, you know, wouldn't encourage dropping the phone, and I'm going to try not to drop the phone, of course.
Mm-hmm.
this one, the thing I like about the case that they did for these, is it literally makes the camera hump on the Pixel 6 Pro, which I will add, it is huge if you're carrying it naked. But if you have it in a case, it's irrelevant. In this case, makes it irrelevant. It makes it fit flat in the wireless pad charger in my new 2022 Chevrolet Traverse. Mm-hmm. And it charges just fine through the wireless. And it's available in lots of colors if you like colors. Nice. I got the soft sage, but I got the stormy sky instead of the light frost or the golden glow or
soft sage, which once again, are awful. How much we hate the namings that they've used for their colors.
Oh, they're horrible. yeah, like the black. The black phone is what?
Stormy black, isn't it?
I think it's stormy black. Yeah, but yeah. Better than sunny. I'll tell you what, though, that's better than sunny yellow. Oh, stormy black. Oh,
that baby puke.
Sort of sunny. Horrible. Yes, and sort cloudy. Of puke.
Horrible.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, it looks like baby food gone bad is what
I totally agree with that.
I don't know who in their marketing chooses those colors, but
they're marketing below end because that's only available on the 128 gigs. Thank God.
Thankfully, I haven't seen any carrier that's offering it by default.
I'm just saying, if you see it out in public, give your condolences to the owner.
Yes. I mean, it's the worst color. I mean, the thing is they had really great colors. Like one of the reasons I had the Pixel 2, I got the white one because it had the orange button on it. I don't know why, but mm-hmm. yeah.
That was a good looking phone.
It was a good looking phone. The Pixel 2 was a great looking phone.
Oh, you know what phone I really liked it was a Google phone. It actually kicked off the whole Google branded phone specifically with the Nexus One. Nexus One, that wonderful little
made by HTC,
that transparent little rollerball that they had that flashed different colors. A full rainbow
cool phone,
different colors. It was a nice phone.
It was a great phone, right?
Great phone. I love that phone.
Also, also codenamed the HTC Passion, if it wasn't the Nexus version.
Yes.
But yes. It was a great phone. Like we've talked about multiple times, even this show, the Pixel 6 is a great phone.
It is.
And the Pixel 6 Pro, too. So. It is.
And Joel, let's see if we can't get together this week and start typing some stuff up. I'll reach out and we'll get it together.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and give my picks of the week. They're listed as three separate picks, but they're really just two. The first one that I want to talk about, guys, I'm a huge, huge watch nut. I am one of those guys that would just go to I could go into the watch catalog or the watch area of the catalog from days gone by and just stand there and flip through it for hours. I can go to a watch store and just again, over and over and over again, absolutely love watches. So I have probably way too many smartwatches than I have need or use for, but I've got them. And I will tell you that even though I love my Apple Watch, I don't like wearing it as much anymore. And it's largely because the watch faces on it just suck. They are horrible. Especially compared to what you can get on either native on the Samsung Galaxy Watch.
What about them do you not like? I guess it would be my broader question.
Comparatively, if you were to look to see what's available with complications and designs,
gotcha.
Either on the Android or Wear OS side versus a Tizen or Galaxy Watch pick a version side.
Is it how many complications you can
put?
No,
it's not necessarily how many
complications.
It is design of the face. It is the amount of information that's on the watch face. It is the type of complications that are available. It is the brand of complications or the brand of faces that are available. All right.
But I gotta say that is definitely person driven, personality driven or something.
It is.
Because I bought my Apple Watch 4 years ago. It's the only computing product I've ever had more than a year, period. Mm-hmm. And I've never changed it. Back then, 4 years ago, I put the infograph on it, the one that's got all the crap.
Yep.
I've never changed it. I've been happy as a clam.
And I have to say the same thing. I've never had a problem with the limitation on them. So I'm honestly curious about what you felt was missing. Well,
let me just go ahead and say if you look at the unboxing and or first impression article that I did on the site for the Fossil Gen 6. All right. You will see some watch faces that came natively and are available through Facer. All right. And that is my my first pick of the week is Facer watch faces.
So
you can go and see them at facer.io. All right. And some of the ones that they've got there are absolutely just amazing.
Am I correct in that they're using a subscription model? Because they weren't real clear. Their website and their app don't really make that clear.
Yes, they are using a subscription model. It's fairly reasonable from a yearly perspective. I believe it was only $30. I could be wrong for the entire year.
What was that URL again?
Facer.io.
Oh, okay.
While they do make a version that works on Apple Watch, it is clunky. It does not work right. Some of the faces do not transfer correctly. Some of the faces do not transfer at all, and you must try to transfer them multiple times. If you've got iOS, if you have an iOS phone, and you are trying to get it to an Android Wear watch or to a Tizen Wear watch, sometimes the faces don't go. If you are you're trying to do it with an Apple Watch, you get some of the same sort of issues and problems. The communication, for whatever reason, doesn't quite go. It's difficult to get the faces over. Some of the faces don't look right. Some of the faces don't fit right. All right. Some of the faces are small and hard to read because of the amount of information that's on them, trying to get them into the size of the screen that's there. All right. And that I think is just native. A basic native platform related issue. It just doesn't work right on the iOS side. It's really meant for an Android Wear watch or a Wear OS watch or a Tizen watch. So, like I said, some of the faces are absolutely amazing. And it just works. So it's available. I've got links out there for both Android and iOS. They are available on both platforms. And it's a decent way to get a really nice professional looking watch face on your smartwatch.
Oh,
the other things that I thought would be interesting to go ahead and look at the new MacBook Pro that I've got. The M1 Max, the beast, the unboxing is out on the site. So please go ahead and take a look at it. The power brick though, for this is very, very different from previous Macs, from previous MacBook Pros. It is a 140 watt USB-C power adapter. It is rectangular. All right. Not a square. All right. It is longer and it is a little bit thicker. All right. It's also got a USB-C to MagSafe 3 cable on it, which is about the cable is about 2 meters long, and it is a braided fabric-based cable as opposed to a hardwired dusty white rubber cable. Where the plastic or the rubber on it kind of dries and cracks and yellows with age. So we'll hopefully see a some different kind of wear, different, maybe a longer wearing period, or a longer use period on the cable. The problem with this though, is that, when you buy the power adapter, you do not get a cable. The cable is sold separately. The power adapter in and of itself is $99. Mm. All right. The USB-C to MagSafe 3 cable, which by the way is different. The MagSafe portion of it is different than the MagSafe 2. So, and from, to my knowledge, there is no $10 adapter like there was from MagSafe 1 to MagSafe 2. So you can't reuse a power adapter from a previous MacBook and just sort of limp along with it. The cable in and of itself is $49. All right. So $150 later, you've got yourself a replacement or an extra power adapter should you need an extra one. We were talking earlier about, you know, how the fruit company kind of charges you.
Yeah.
And this is a clear example of them doing that. For $99, they should have gone ahead and included the cable. I thought that was a little bit on the.
Hey, I think their philosophy is it's like the old Mac Pro. You know, if you can afford the machine, you can afford the wheels.
Yeah.
I
hear you. Though the wheels for that particular machine, I think cost $1,000.
Unbelievable, wasn't it?
Just totally just unreasonably outrageous. This is, of course, isn't that bad, but at a 50, you know, for it hitting you for an extra 50, I think is not cool. I'd love to see this sort of combined at maybe $129 to $139 and give me some kind of a break on the deal. But I mean, geez. Anyway, but it's out there if you need it, and it's now available. They're listed as new on the accessories portion of the Apple site. So when you click through to apple.com and you click on the accessories tab.
I will say this though, having bought those over the years.
Yeah.
And I like some of the newer Anchor stuff that we've all talked about that I've been buying that I've been very happy with as well. But having said that, I will say when I have bought the Apple power adapters, they last forever.
They do.
Yep, they do.
You know,
they
do. I mean, the cables wear out, like you said, but the dang brick just keeps going.
Oh, it keeps on chugging. It keeps on chugging. If there was a problem with the older bricks, it was not the brick. It was always the cable. They would always fray.
The problem is they keep now make every new model a different wattage, and you can't use the new one.
It's true. It's true, but we'll have to wait and see how well these things last. But I have a feeling they may have cracked the nut on the cable, but we'll see. I don't see this.
Yeah.
Yep. It's just like me wanting to have, you know, you have those 6-port USB chargers. I'd like to have the same thing for USB-C, but they use so much power that's probably not going to be a thing.
Yep. I will tell you, something interesting about the new MacBook Pro in the after show portion. So don't let me forget, but those are my picks of the week.
Yep.
Some really good watch faces for your smartwatch, especially your Android, based or your Wear OS based, watches, or your Tizen based Galaxy Watch, works very, very well with all of those. And that is the iTech Gear Weekly episode number 12, Turn Your Old Computer into a Chromebook, recorded again Sunday, February 20th, 2022. I'm Christopher Spera. And for Chris, Joel, and Larry, I want to say thank you to everybody for listening. And come on back. We'll be here.